Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 39% of couples say money is the number one cause of most arguments, and 54% say money is the number two cause of most arguments. Our guest this hour has written a book about really love and money. He says it's about how to have a healthy relationship with both money and your spouse, how to avoid the all too common fights regarding spending, saving, investing, and the like, how to build your financial house with a person you love, and perhaps more importantly, how to live happily and harmoniously while doing so. Jeff Motzke is our guest. His book is The Couple's Guide to Financial Compatibility, Avoiding Fights About Spending and Saving and Building a Happy and Secure Future Together. He is a certified financial planner, president and CEO of Trilogy Financial Services, lives in Orange County, California, and we're happy to have him with us. I would imagine that we're going to have lots of phone calls. He can take on a variety of different areas, good debt and bad debt, student loan debt. Should you buy life insurance? Should you rent? Should you own? What if you lose a job? Can you afford to have children? How to teach children about money? How you can take care of your children and parents at the same time? Just you name it, any financial question you may have or concern, I'm sure that Jeff will be able to take it on this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that is @KDunnShow. Hello, Jeff. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great pleasure. So couples fight a lot about money. Number one cause, 39% say that money is the number one cause of most arguments. What do people fight about?
Well, for many couples, it's simply the real nasty things about spending too much and not saving enough. And unfortunately, a lot of couples out there are either living the paycheck to paycheck or they're in debt. And those are huge problems that people fight about all the time.
Mm-hmm. And it leads to people breaking up a lot of the time, doesn't it?
It does, because these are disputes that don't oftentimes get settled. They just argue, and then both parties walk away, and they don't settle the argument, and then it comes back up, even in a more heated moment down the road, too, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. You've been a financial advisor for over two decades. You and your colleagues have helped more than 50,000 people. That's a lot. And are you able to move a lot of people through, or are there some situations that just the wrong people got married to each other with wildly different ideas, or maybe even the same ideas? They will spend a whole lot of money, and they're in debt, so they eventually part. Have you been able to keep people together for the most part?
We have, and I think probably the biggest reason why, Kathleen, is we've taken the time to meet with all our couples. We don't meet with individuals, you know, one without the other there, but I built an assessment quite a while back, and then I kind of turned it into a financial compatibility quiz, which is part of the book. And I think what happened there was the assessment and quiz that we used with couples got the conversation started, and I think that's the key to a lot of this, is if you put the quiz in front of them and it goes through a lot of the topics you were talking about in the introduction, when they leave a first meeting with one of our advisors or myself, I guarantee they're in the car and they're both calm and they're both saying to themselves, hey, how did you answer that question about college education? Or how did you answer that question about housing? Those types of things. And it just gets the conversation going in the right type of environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we spent the first hour, it was kind of a sad hour, really, talking about people whose parents, you know, had fairly good paying, even they didn't go to college, good paying jobs in skilled trades, and their children aren't doing as well. And so you've got this whole group of people who either they're college graduates and they can't find jobs in their field, or they didn't think about it carefully enough when they went into college, or they're working in a field and not making enough money, and they had to return to their father-in-law's basement to live a couple of years so they can have enough money to put a down payment on a house, or they have student debt. We hear from so many. So let's start our conversation with those young people who are entering a marriage with quite a bit of debt, and maybe with jobs that just don't pay very well. How can you get ahead?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the last part you touched on, which was student debt, is the key one out there. There's studies show there's over $1 trillion of it out there. I think it's a huge issue that people just don't think a lot about. And how to get out of it, first of all, is to kind of take some, you know, basic principles, which is start with a budget, work to live within your means, start to pay yourself first. And then when it comes to debt, I mean, evaluate your debt. And I always say there's good debt and bad debt. Good debt is real estate, and if these people don't own homes, then they don't own that. But bad debt is credit card debt. You want to get rid of that as fast as possible, and that really stems from sitting down and, you know, running a household budget. And then I call this kind of gray area debt, which is student loans, because they hopefully took those student loans with the purpose to go out and get a great education, but then go out and get a good job that goes with that. And if they did that, hopefully as they progress in whatever career they choose, and they're going to get raises, and then you just really want to power away at knocking down that debt, because it's a burden for them at those young ages, and they get stressed out about it, and it's going to cause problems if you don't put a plan in place.
Yeah. And what about renting places or getting homes? Is it still a good investment to get yourself a piece of property, or not so much anymore?
Well, and I think that's a little bit of a regional issue, but I still believe in, you know, and I think that having a home, having a place that you call your home for your loved ones and your family is a great thing. But I always say your home is not an investment. It's where you want to live. And, you know, choose wisely on where you want to do that, because it's a lot of times, too, these recent graduates, they may need to be mobile for their careers as well. And you don't want to be saddled with a house. So sometimes starting out renting and making sure that's really where you want to settle down makes sense. And the nice thing about rent, it's usually a lower cost. You can take some money and sock it away to other problems, whether it's debt or other goals that you have, too. So renting's not necessarily a bad thing for younger people.
When do you know you have enough money to have children?
Well, I mean, you know, far be it for me to tell people when and when to not have children, but I think you need to understand that there's a cost and a responsibility with having kids. And I think that's really important to understand, is that, you know, the average cost to raise a child is, you know, depending on what study you look at, it's six figures and beyond, and you need to be prepared for that and make your lifestyle decisions so that when you have kids that you're not, again, stressed and saddled with debt, because having kids can be stressful too. I've got two, so.
Yes, it can be. And now we're entering, put yourself 22 years down the road, and maybe you have kids who are just entering college, and you also have parents. Maybe some of them don't have very much money either, so you've got that kind of financial stress as well. I know your book deals with that.
Yeah, that's huge, Kathleen, is that I call that the sandwich generation. I'm kind of in that pocket right now where I'm starting. I've got one in high school, obviously thinking about college and college costs, and my parents, my dad is retiring this year, and they're all in their mid-70s, and my in-laws as well. And they're all fine now, but maybe 5 years down the road, maybe they're not, unfortunately, all with us, or more importantly, they're going to need some help. And they may need some financial help. They may need your time. Whatever it is, you've got to be prepared for that, and you've got to communicate with your spouse about these things, too, because if you think, you know, mom's going to move in with us if dad passes away and your spouse says, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You need to be thinking about those things. And there's one question in the quiz that deals with that elder care issue, because people are living longer, and they're living healthier, but at the same time, the number one fear of a retiree is running out of debt or running out of money, and the number two fear is they don't want to be a burden to their kids. And I think those are important things to discuss with your spouse early and plan while it hasn't happened yet. Being proactive is important in those areas.
Well, you start the book with, and it's an indication of how little communication there is. Susie and I can't remember, Jed and Susie, and she, they had a baby and she wanted to stay home, and this came as a surprise to him, and it came as a surprise to her that Jed had $110,000 in law school debt that he never told her about.
Right. And
whoa.
You'd be surprised, Kathleen, how often people hide money and hide debt from people. You know, lots of them are out there where, you know, people hide purchases, but they hide debt, in particular credit card debt, because they don't want that to hurt the relationship. They love the person so much, but they don't talk about it until, you know, right before the wedding day or after the wedding day. There's all kinds of those stories out there, and I think financial transparency is key in a relationship, and I really talk a lot about that in the book, is that, you know, the more transparent you are, the more you're on the same page as a team, you're gonna get to what I call financial independence, which is the day that work becomes an option. And I talk a lot about getting to that. Whether you decide to work or not is one thing, but getting to that point is real liberating. And I've had lots of clients that have walked through that over the years, and the look on their faces when I can tell them, hey, you don't have to go to any work anymore. You can still do it, but you choose to make that decision.
Right.
It's really powerful.
Yeah. So do people who think the same about money tend to get married to people who think as they do, or do opposites attract in this area?
I think it's a little of both, but I will say that in general, when you're looking for a spouse or a mate, the more that you can try to find things that you're similar in when it comes to money, you're going to argue less, which is going to make for a better overall plan. Now, that being said, if you're both wild and crazy spenders, that may be great today, but when the credit card bills come in or where you can't pay things down the road, you're going to argue about those things. So trying to be on the same page. But I also say, too, with couples, play to your strengths. My wife loves budgets, and she pays the bills, and she loves doing all that stuff. And I let her do that work, and then I'm obviously in the investment world, and I do the planning, the longer-term type stuff. But we're always comparing notes. You know, we have what I call a financial date night, and we're always comparing those notes to make sure we're on the same page.
Do you really have fun on a financial date night?
Yeah, we actually do, and that's interesting because it's not all about budgets and portfolios and, you know, all this thing. It's more about the future and, you know, how we see things 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and, you know, what the future looks like to us. Because if you have goals and dreams out there, it's a lot easier to start putting a plan in place. If you don't think about what your future looks like as a couple, then you're not going to take the time to plan accordingly to get there. And that's part of what the date night is. But we go out every Wednesday night, but one time out of the month is a financial date night.
Thank you, Jeff.
Just
wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
What about this? It seems to me as though people who are starting out now have a very different life than when I was starting out. I bounced around and did some different things and had the luxury to be able to do that. It was a different era. Now you hear so much about young people who may not have one career. They're going to have lots of different jobs. They're going to be going maybe from city to city. They're going to be reinventing who they are, and maybe one job will pay well, but you don't have this steady career climbing that other generations had. How do you plan for that financially?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think, you know, the average person is going to change careers. At some point, they may look to start working and start their own business. And to plan for those things, you know, having an emergency fund set aside so that if you decide to change careers and you're going into a career that now you love to do, but it's going to pay less than what you're doing now, having money in an account that has no investment risk to cover some of those fixed expenses for maybe the next 3 to 6 months or even longer than that is huge when it comes to planning and making those changes. Also, talking to your spouse about it. I like what I'm doing, but I don't love what I'm doing, and I want to change careers. And having those discussions about how that's going to impact the monthly household budget is huge. And if you do those things, then I think you can change careers and move around and kind of enjoy life at the same time. Because I think we work too much to not enjoy what you do.
So right,
you need to find out. Yeah, you need to find out what you really like to do, and then you got to find out how is there a way that I can make this work within our household.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Motzke is our guest this hour, and his book, which covers so many different areas, it's The Couple's Guide to Financial Compatibility, Avoid Fights About Spending and Saving, and Build a Happy and Secure Foundation Together. He offers advice on investing. We haven't talked about that at all, what you need to consider before you retire. What if, which would be a wonderful thing, you got a large sum of money, you won the lottery or something, sudden windfall. How do you take care of your kids and your parents at the same time? There's been a lot of talk lately about financial advisors and how you go about choosing a financial advisor. What about planning for college? What about life insurance, where you'd like to live? What if you lose your job? Where do you invest? What you need to discuss as a couple before you invest, how much you start with, what are stocks, what are bonds? Just, you know, it runs the whole gamut of financial issues, and it's also a guide to a happier marriage because people fight about money in marriages. And a lot of people get divorced because they're fighting about money in a marriage that dissolves because of money. So here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your messages there. And we are on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Jeff Modsky, author of The Couple's Guide to Financial Compatibility. A couple lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation. Here's how you do so, 800-486-8655. Guy in West Dallas is our first caller, Jeff. Hi, Guy.
Hi. I have a question. You mentioned earlier to say pay yourself first. And I'm wondering what the definition of that is. Do you pay yourself just for food? Do you pay yourself for food, housing, and transportation? Define what you mean by pay yourself first.
Hi, Guy. Pay yourself first would be when you get your paycheck, you would take a percentage of that, and I recommend to work up to at least 15% of that paycheck into whatever your particular goals are. Then you work the rest of it into all of your budgeting, which would be the first thing in your budget are what I call critical expenses, which is your where you live, your rent or your mortgage. The next thing is your food, and we're not talking about fine dining, just your food, your transportation, and your health. So those are your next expenses. And then you move into what I call your lifestyle expenses. And that's all the things that you like to do that bring joy to your relationship and bring joy to you. But you should be taking that off the top. And that money should be going into whatever your goals are for your household, whether it's retirement, if you've got kids you want to put them through college, if you want to buy a home, put it into a home. But that's where you start. It's just pay yourself first. And once you start doing that, Guy, what will happen is, you won't even notice. It'll be kind of out of sight, out of mind, much like if you have a 401k at work or some type of plans. It'll immediately go into an account, and then you'll start seeing that statement, and it'll be a real positive thing for your household as far as seeing that, hey, I've got some money now set aside in certain buckets for my future.
Is that helpful?
Thank you.
All right, Guy. Thanks for the call. Tyson in Cross Plains. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Kind of question trying to find an answer for is that when does a person know that they've reached financial contentment and how do you get to that position? Say if you get to that savings goal or make $10,000 and you want to make 50, and after you make 50, it seems like it's a never-ending desire. Any recommendations for that?
Yeah, Tyson, that would be, for example, I call it financial independence. And what you'd want to do, and a good competent advisor could do this for you, but there's websites out there as well, and you'd sit down and say, what type of income am I going to need in retirement to be able to sustain my standard of living or possibly increase it? So you would look at that number and say, I need to make, let's say you're whatever your number is, say I need to make 80% of that today. Well, then you figure out, what kind of nest egg am I going to need? How much money am I going to need set aside in an account to get me that type of monthly income? And once you have that nest egg, whatever it is, that number is, then you start to take income off of that, and you've kind of, in, for lack of better words, you've replaced your paycheck. So the day that you can replace your paycheck, and I always say replacing it 100%, you don't need to do that. About 80% of your paycheck is what most Americans will need as far as getting to that point. And it's calculations that advisors can do, but it's not rocket science as far as helping people in that area.
That's a good way to look at it, 80% of what you have now, your paycheck.
80% of your check, because you've got Social Security, and in some cases you've got pensions coming in, and you can add those into that number too.
Uh-huh. Is that helpful, Tyson? I guess it is. We go to Molly in Milwaukee. Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Hi.
Long-time listener. Anyway, I was just wondering, I am in my late 20s, and I have a long-term significant other that we have no immediate plans to get married, but have, you know, future plans to buy a house together and all that future stuff. But we keep all of our finances separate, and I was just wondering what your guest had to say about at what point is a good time, if you're not married, to combine accounts, or maybe should we keep, like, our IRAs separate for our retirement, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What kind of opinion he has on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, first of all, your IRAs are going to be separate. Any retirement accounts you have are going to be separated. Your name's on one, your partner's is on the other. As far as setting up accounts, I always say when you start buying assets together, in other words, if it's a house, things together where you're both on there, you should have joint accounts to cover those particular expenses for sure at a minimum. I always say, too, in a relationship, there's no I in team, and the more that you work together and the more financially transparent you are with each other, the more financial success you're going to have. That doesn't mean you can't have your own fun money side account or monthly or weekly amount of money that you spend that you don't have to be accountable for. But the more you work together, the better financial success you're going to have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Does that help?
Anything else,
cool.
Molly?
No, that'll be it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And should couples be so specific that they will decide how much money you can spend on clothing for a year, or if you want to go out to eat with your friends, how much should be set aside for that? Does all of that need to be discussed, do you think?
Well, yes. And I think here's the thing is, 70% of Americans don't operate off of a household budget, and that's like,
wow.
It's like trying to build a financial house without any blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't really know what you're saving and spending. So that's the first thing. But the biggest problem with people not doing a budget is it's got a negative connotation. They probably don't want to know how they're spending their money, so therefore they don't want to do it. But the second that people take the time to sit down, and I have a one-pager on my website and in the back of the book that's a one-page worksheet. And if they will just do that, Kathleen, it would help them immensely as far as just figuring out where all their money's going. And I think that's important. But trying to get people to get all complicated and put all their stuff down, they won't do it. And at least not right away. They won't do
it. And how many couples do hide things from each other? You buy things and you put it away in the closet, and then you bring it out a year later, and, oh, I haven't seen that before. Oh, yeah, you just didn't notice because you had it for so long.
That's the I Love Lucy episode from way back. She used to hide stuff in the back of the closet. But, yes, and actually guys tend to hide more expenses than women do.
Really?
And there's lots of studies out there. But we tend to hide things, and I'm a golfer, so, you put the extra golf driver that you bought that was supposed to make your ball go further and straighter, and you keep it in the bag forever, and you don't say anything to your spouse, and then maybe they're hiding shopping or something like that. But about half of Americans hide purchases.
Ooh.
And it's sad that that happens, and it causes problems down the road because eventually people figure it out.
Yeah, I would imagine that they do. Eventually, you're going to get caught, right?
You are.
So you are honest about that driver at some point? Were you?
I haven't hidden my driver in the bag. It's the same one I've had for years. But I have. Let's just say I have a few colleagues that I think spend a little extra money at the golf shop buying golf clubs that maybe their spouse doesn't know about.
Right. Jennifer in Jackson, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and share a little bit of success. I know that it's really, really difficult for a lot of couples starting out, and I definitely ran into this problem when my husband and I were first dating. We didn't disclose how much debt we had, and I am kind of a squirrel it away and save it kind of person, and he, especially after graduating from college and getting a real job, like to spend his money. And when I found out how much debt he was in about 2 years into our relationship, I told him, I'm not marrying you unless you get some of this stuff under control. And it was really hard on our relationship. And fast forward a couple of years, we decided that we did want to get married, even though he hadn't paid off everything. He had changed the way that he lived, at least. And so I felt like we agreed on stuff enough to move forward in our relationship. And I was in a job that I really hated. And so I actually was able to leave my job and move in with him, and we budgeted, and we lived far more cheaply together than we ever had on our own, and we've paid off all of our debt. The only thing that we owe on now is our mortgage, and, I just wanted to tell people out there that it is really difficult, and, financial date nights may not sound like a whole lot of fun, but they actually are, because you get to talk about your hopes and your dreams together as a couple, and it can work. It's just a process. So don't worry about doing it too quickly, because it'll happen.
All right, Jennifer. That's a great story of success, Jeff.
Great. And Jennifer, good for you for sitting down and telling him that you're not going to marry him until he gets his debt squared away, because you don't want to walk into a relationship saddled with debt. And for a lot of people, it's a real turnoff if they know their person they're dating or spouse has significant debt issues or significant credit issues. And I think that's good that she took the time to sit him down, and now look where they are. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Our number, 800-486-8655. So if you've reached a point where you got the debt down and you got a little extra money to spare here, or you have more than a little bit of money to spare, where do you put it?
Well, you sit down and say, as a couple, what are my most important emotional goals that we want to accomplish? And if I've got two kids, I want to put those two kids through college. Well, then we got to start thinking about how we're going to go about that. And, you know, the simplest answer there is these 529 college plans, where you can sock away as little as $25 a month, but you can go up to a lot more than that to help pay for college tuition costs down the road, because college is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one avenue. If you're beyond that and you're saying, hey, I need to start thinking about my retirement, well, then a Roth IRA is a great savings vehicle to start socking money away that grows on a tax-deferred basis, and it comes out tax-free as long as you use it, you follow the rules in your retirement. And you start socking money into these types of programs, and then what happens is when you start seeing some success with them, all of a sudden you're more and more motivated to save and put more money away. When you get that raise, you're more motivated to put it into your, what I call, the financial rooms in your house.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard, there have been a lot of reports lately, this story kind of exploded a few months ago, of financial advisors and making sure that you can find somebody who's really above board and is looking out for your best interest first and foremost.
Correct. Yeah, I would say, and I'm a certified financial planner, and that's kind of like the top designation or tier in our industry, and we have to operate off the highest standard from an advisor standpoint. All of our advisors at Trilogy, we train that way as well. So I think when you're looking for an advisor, look for somebody that is a relationship that you can connect with. That's important. I would definitely ask around for professional referrals and references. Those are great places to go to find somebody. And then when you're meeting with them, make sure that both you and your spouse are very comfortable talking to them, because you're talking about very intimate details.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to what you're paying for, ask what you're paying for, and know what you're paying for and why you're paying for it.
Our phone number, we would love to have you join our conversation, because it's so important to couples and to individuals as well. But Jeff has written a book that looks at the couple's guide to financial compatibility, and how you can, because these kinds of fights are so common, how couples can avoid fights about spending and saving, and how they can build a happy and secure future together, particularly during these times when wages are down from what they were 10 to 15 years ago. How can you save? How can you save for your retirement? If you have children, how do you handle that? What if you have completely different ideas about how money should be spent, except that you still love each other and you want to stay together? Something's going to have to give. What if somebody comes to a relationship with a significant amount of debt? How do you deal with that? What is most important in terms of taking care of debt? Financial loans, credit cards, what do you do about credit cards? All of that and more is in his book. And we welcome phone calls for him. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We have space there, of course, for you to write down your thoughts about what it is we are talking about. And when it comes to debt, which I just mentioned, Jeff, are there certain kinds of debt that you need to take care of first? If you have credit card debt from just you put too much money in purchases, and you also have student loan debt, are there things that you should take care of first?
Credit cards at the very top of the list. And I would say I'm a little bit different in how a lot of people think about credit card debt. If you've got four credit cards, and let's say one of them is at $8,000 and it has a really high interest rate, 19%, another one's at like $800 and it's got a lower interest rate at like 11%, I would say pay the $800 one off first. Pay the minimum on the other three, pay the $800 one off first, be done with it, and then move on to the next one. Get that emotional sense of accomplishment of paying off one of those cards before you move on to the next one. And a lot of people say cut up cards, which most people can't or won't do. I'm a big fan of actually freezing them. Throw them in a cup of water and put them in the freezer, because you have to think long and hard about using them again before you actually use them. So,
really? I mean, you actually do that. Freeze them.
I have, and like I said, you can't put it in the microwave because you'll ruin your microwave and the card. But you can actually just sit and watch those things thaw out before you actually want to use them. And most people, you just won't use them. You'll become far more disciplined with them. And credit cards are a 30-day loan at best. And you have to, if you can't afford to pay it off that month, you shouldn't be putting the credit card out to buy something. And a real good exercise that I tell some people that have credit card issues with is use cash for a while. Use cash for a while, and you will spend less money. Every study shows you'll spend less money if you use cash.
I'll bet that's very true. You can see that cash, and then when you're low on it.
Yeah, you can see it. You know what it is, and you're saying, gosh, is, you know, putting all these $20 bills out there really worth that new outfit? Is it really worth this here or there? Or would I be better off saving that money or, you know, not having that debt?
Yeah. Let's go to Sarah in Mequon. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I'm just calling because my former husband and I, we just divorced less than 2 months ago over finances, and I just wanted to share my story because I'm hoping that someone can learn from it.
Go right ahead.
I want to say that I entered the marriage with excellent credit, but tremendous credit card debt. So, as a result, I was working two jobs to pay off this debt, but I wasn't paying it off as well as or as diligently as I should have. My husband, on the other hand, had filed for bankruptcy, which I was aware of prior to our marriage. But he had other debts that he pretty much hid until he couldn't hide it anymore, and then the perfect storm happened. So within 2 months, actually 3 months of us moving in together, my husband tells me for no apparent reason that he's unable to pay the rent.
Oh.
So, of course, I'm saying to myself, like, okay, what is going on? Can you explain why you're not able to pay the rent? He's like, well, I had this bill, I had that bill, but there was really no solid, concrete answer to it. Then, after that happened, his cell phone starts getting shut off. So I'm clearly like, and this is what's interesting about this situation is we were both teachers, and I was also a personal trainer. And I knew, you know, about how much money he was making per month because we were both teachers and we worked for the same district. So I was thinking to myself, even though I don't know exactly what's going on your end, it's got to be tight. But he kept telling me, you know, I don't need a job. I'm like, are your bills being paid? You're into the bills. He was like, yeah, bills are being paid. So needless to say, to make a long story very, very short, we were getting eviction notices, and he was hiding them, basically. I was paying my rent, my portion of the rent on time. He was not paying the rent on time. He was incurring late fees. His responsibility was to pay also the electricity bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He told me, you know what, I have something to tell you, but it's going to ruin your day, so I'm not going to tell you it. I'm like, of course, my day is ruined. So went through my day, had a horrible day, of course, come home, and he's like, if we don't pay our electricity bill, our electricity is going to be shut off. I said, well, how much is the bill? He goes, it's $1,500.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I'm afraid this could go on for a long time. I'm sorry that this happened, but was there a way that this could have been gone a different way, Jeff?
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think they got into the marriage and the relationship without any transparency on the front end. And I would say for everybody out there listening, read a book like this, and you're going to find out that a lot of these issues would have been solved before they even got into the relationship. They probably would have never gotten married had they read the book.
Right.
Because they would have never been married, which, you know, it's sad and tragic that ends up in divorce and their credits get ruined and all that. But for everybody out there listening, is just those discussions needed to happen before they got married.
Yeah. Oh, that's a sad story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
$1,500 electric bill.
Just,
wow.
Yeah, it probably built up, hadn't paid it, and it got to a cutoff point and probably had all those charges in error. Thank you, Sarah. I hope things get a little better for you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We have some lines open now, and our guest is Jeff Motzke. It's a really valuable book on a couple's guide to financial compatibility, on how to avoid fights about spending and saving and build a happy and secure future together. And so that's what we're talking about this hour. And if you're just tuning us in, it covers so many different areas. It covers retirement. It covers how you can take care of your children, get them ready, get them enough money for college. Can you afford to have children? What is your game plan? What about life insurance? Where should you live? What if you lose a job? Just how do we find a financial advisor, estate planning, all of that. 800-486-8655. We'll take more phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Jeff Motzke. He's the author of The Couple's Guide to Financial Compatibility. 800-486-8655, our number. And Danielle in Saukville is next. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Hi.
My first-time caller.
Thanks for calling.
My question is where to start with budgeting. And a backstory with myself is I have a husband. We have two young girls. We make a little bit more than $120,000 a year. We have a mortgage and two car payments. We have some debt that my husband has a hard time with. I feel like it's just a part of life, but listening to you guys today, I really do think it's important to get rid of that. But my question is, we thought we would start a budget, and we started doing a cash per week, $200 per week to do grocery and household toiletries. But I'm having a hard time with it because when I go to a store, I don't just buy those things. Sometimes I buy clothing for the kids or other items. So it's hard to focus just on that thing with the cash. But the cash was nice because I could visually see how much I was spending. So I'm just looking for advice on that.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, never walk into Target without a list because you'll spend way more money. And I always say this, you know, don't be listless. And I talk about, you know, not the five-hour energy drink, but when you walk into stores, have a list of what you're going to buy that day and stick to that list, because stores are brilliant marketers at being able to get you to pull more things off the shelf, buy different things here and there. And if your kids are with you too, Danielle, they're going to be doing the exact same thing. So trying to just mentally walk in with that list saying, this is what I need, these are the expenses I have, and then if it's something, an outfit or whatever, saying, is this outfit more valuable to me and will bring me more joy to the household and we can afford this versus having this money put towards paying down our debt. So kind of mentally walking yourself through that exercise will help you quite a bit. And first of all, I'm glad you're starting a budget and operating off of one, because you will knock out that debt if you can start budgeting every single month. You will. And I've seen it over and over and over again.
Hmm. What do you think about leaving money to your children?
I get that a lot, too. I think it's fine, but be careful in that kids need to understand how to earn money. I don't know about you. I grew up not in a very, very modest household. My first job was a paper route. And learning the value of money and learning how it works, Kathleen, versus getting a bunch of money dumped on you via an inheritance, I think it can get them in a scenario where they put themselves into trouble because they're not earning their own keep, so to speak. So I'm inheritance-wise, if there is a big inheritance, put an estate plan in place that gradually puts it in there and puts the rules in place so that they're not able to get all this money at a young age and go out and spend it and blow it, because I have seen that happen. I've seen that happen with people too. And the other thing I'm big about, if you're in that scenario, is gifting some money to kids while you're alive, because then you get to see what they do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see if they appreciate it. You see if they're being responsible with it. Those are all good things to do. And I've recommended that to a lot of clients, is that, hey, give them a gift. You can give $14,000 a year now to anyone. and see what they do with it and if they are responsible with it versus having giving them all this money.
Mm-hmm. So. And in terms of just figuring out where you should be putting your money, there's so many venues for that. It seems to me, Jeff, as though many of us are fairly financially illiterate, that we don't know about stocks and bonds, and we don't know how to do that, and we don't know how to find the best financial advisor, and we don't know how much to save for retirement. It's a whole area of a lack of knowledge for many of us. I know you want people to read the book, which is helpful, but should we be taking this on in some other way so that we know more?
I think... You know, certainly I have a whole chapter on investments in the book, and I think it's really helpful for somebody from the very beginning stages learning how to work. But there's tons of great avenues out there. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff on the internet that are good sources that you can go to. But I also think, too, going to somebody else in your family or a colleague that you respect about how they've been working with money, so to speak, and asking them who they work with and getting a professional reference is good. If you go to do your taxes, you can ask your tax preparer or CPA, who do they use in this area? And then when you meet with an advisor, I am huge on education. I want every one of my clients to understand what they own, and I will go all the way down to the very basics to make sure they understand what they own. And my other rule is I want them to be able to sleep at night. If they can't sleep at night and they don't understand what they own, then that's not good. And I think that if you keep those kind of simple rules in place for people, knowing what you own and why you own it, and then you can sleep at night, that's your risk type question. That's a great starting point. But there's lots of great sources out there for people. And books, obviously the internet world. There's some pretty decent talk radio shows, too, that help people on finance, too.
So you recommend, what about when we're younger? What about teaching our children about all of this? What about schools teaching about all of this?
Well, schools is great. I actually have gone in on campus and taught in classrooms economics and stuff, too, and I'm shocked at how little that kids know. And I think it's important as parents to teach your kids about money, and the earlier you start teaching them about it, the better. Because here's the deal. They're watching you and how you spend your money and what you do, and if you're careless and throwing out your credit card all over the places, or you're yelling with your spouse and they're hearing you talk about money and arguing about that, or you know, things are going on, they're going to have that same behavior versus sitting down and talking to your child about how a bank account works, how interest works, how compound interest works, how to use the ATM. You'd be shocked how many kids don't know how to use the ATM, how to write a check, which nowadays people don't write as many checks, but how to balance your checkbook. Those are all good fundamental things that you can teach kids at an early age. My daughter's 12. She understands compound interest. We do a little thing called the Motsky Matching Program where whatever money they save from gifts from grandparents or whatever, we put in 25 cents on the dollar into their savings account.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really encouraging for them because they're now seeing money being put in on their behalf too. So, and it's a win-win. Now I've got more dollars set aside for my kids as well too. So, But teaching kids is critical.
All right, let's go to thanks Danielle, Eric in Madison. Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to bring up a little point on student loan debt and career paths that people choose when they're going into college. I do have a lot of student loan debt. I guess I expected my career opportunities would be a little bit better than what they have turned out to be. And so I'm actually in the natural sciences field, biology and ecology, and I would actually advise my son to maybe look for a different career path than the one I chose, because the amount of debt is not the return is not where I thought it was going to be going into college. I think there was a disconnect between what I was believing when I came in and was taking out these loans to get my education, my graduate degree, and I'm feeling a pinch. My family's feeling a pinch right now on that. So I was wondering if you guys could kind of comment on that.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah, and it sounds like, Eric, did you go and get your undergrad degree at the same school as your graduate degree? Did you go to two different places?
No, same. Yeah, UW-Madison.
Okay.
So graduate, undergraduate, yeah. Graduate. I even started a PhD program and actually had to, because of family circumstances, had to pull out of my PhD program because of financial reasons. Mm.
Yeah, and what did you want to do for a career when you started?
Well, I mean, I went in the field of ecology because I was really dedicated and really passionate about the field of ecology. I really wanted to, it sounds cheesy, but I wanted to save the world, you know, as far as...
That's all right.
You know,
as far as, like, you know, making a difference in the environment. But once I kind of got into the workforce, either with state or federal agencies, I started to realize that my expectations were way out of proportion compared to what I was taking out in student loans to, you know, afford my education.
And Eric, did you get your undergrad degree in 4 years, or was it 5 years, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I had a lot of great experiences. I mean, I traveled and worked in many places in the Caribbean and in Antarctica. I mean, all over the planet, really. So I had great experiences in that sense. But you know, once I got done with my degree, I found myself at a job that
couldn't handle the debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yeah, and I would say a couple things. First of all, getting a degree is a huge accomplishment, and getting a graduate degree is another huge accomplishment. So congratulations that you've done those things, and they provided something for you to go out and, you know, be employable. The hard part is sometimes getting those degrees don't lead into the types of careers that can pay those particular costs. So just a couple of things for the listeners out there. One thing you might want to consider is that instead of going 4 years at that school, and I live in California. California has great California campuses and so forth, but you can go to community college for 2 years, get the same credits and degrees that you need, and then transfer to those next 2 years, and you have the same degree at half the price. Because mm-hmm. you were there. If you just can't afford, or you're taking all that tuition debt on, then that's one simple thing. The other one, which is, and I'm glad that he was able to finish it, sounded like in 4 years, which is great. Most people aren't. They're
right.
Finishing in 5 or 6 years, and they're paying tuition, and it's costing them 25% to 50% more
mm-hmm.
to get that degree. So those are just simple things that you can do. And then you kind of really need to take a step back sometimes and evaluate, okay, I want to get this degree. What type of career opportunities are going to be out there? And how much debt am I going to have when I graduate to do that? If you're going to be a lawyer or an accountant or something like that, and you know the opportunity is there to pay down the debt, maybe it's worth taking on all that debt. But otherwise, you may need to say maybe 2 years at that school and then 2 years here versus the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of options out there. And the other part is, for everybody that's younger and has kids, start saving early. Start saving money early for kids in college.
How true. Who knows what it's going to be like 18 years from now? Oh, my gosh.
It could be very, very expensive.
It sure could. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for being with us. It's a
great
hour.
Well, thank you for having me. And this is such a great forum. And to me, it's such an important topic. And I hope the listeners out there understand how important it is to be on the same page financially as a couple, because when you do that, you're going to have so much more happiness in your relationship, and money won't be any reason why you argue. You might argue about something else, but not about money.
That's good. Jeff Motzke, and his book is The Couple's Guide to Financial Compatibility, Avoid Fights About Spending and Saving, and Build a Happy and Secure Future Together. It is just published in paperback, and he is president and CEO of Trilogy Financial Services, lives with his family in Orange County, California. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production in Milwaukee. Thanks to you for listening and also for your phone calls. Great conversations ahead. We'll be back with you on Monday for all things political, which you always hear Mondays at 1 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.